Tom Thumb, Albertsons, Chevron, and Texaco are offering more savings at the pump. Earn 2x gas reward points on all participating Monopoly items through April 25th. Purchase products with Monopoly Collect to Win game tags and enter your number at checkout to earn points. Redeem gas rewards for up to 20 cents off per gallon at participating Chevron or Texaco stations and $1 off per gallon at Tom Thumb stations. Up to 25 gallons in a single fill-up. Other restrictions and exclusions apply. Go to TomThumb.com/rewards or Albertsons.com/rewards for more information. See game rules at PlayMonopoly.us. Monopoly is a trademark of Hasbro and is used with permission.
Radio. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres, and every week I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Carlos. Easter finally brought some spring weather to the north. We had a wonderful weekend last weekend with family. We hope you did too. Plus, we got in some golf along the way. And last week in golf, Wes Bryan earned a popular win in his home state of South Carolina. This Lexi thing just won't go away. And Lydia Ko is still not happy. Carlos, I have a lot to talk about tonight, so let's get to it. Let's go.
I just hope I have some breaks here and there to comment some things. So if not, I'll have to get my resource of the mute button. So people, please.
I'll try and let you in, but, you know.
Okay. Please just let me talk a little bit from here and there. I don't ask much, okay? But no, there was a lot of action. I mean, we have a loaded backspin that we're going to start pretty soon, PGA Tour, LPGA Tour, Champions, and the European Tour. We're going to be previewing also the action on all the major tours that is going to be coming this weekend. We're going to talk about Sergio again. Yes, we can. He's getting all the attention lately. Rory, we're going to talk about Michael Wan. We have so much to talk about, so let's start, as usual, with the weekend backswing. And Fred, you did it. You did say it. I have to say it. I have to commend you, give you kudos. You said Wesley Bryan was going to win sooner rather than later, and yes, he did this weekend. He won there. I was pulling for Luke Donald because I want him so bad to win one finally, but his chance right away. I mean, this is the only tournament I think he does well lately, and he couldn't win it. So tell us all about Wesley Bryan, your guy who won it.
Yeah, I really like Wes Bryan. He did so well in it. He proved, you know, he started out as being kind of a curiosity with the YouTube videos, but he proved last year that he can play. And when he came out on tour this year, he made cuts, and he's done well. He's had some top 10. So, but I'm going to get into that. Anyhow, and as you said, five-time runner-up at Hilton Head, former number one in the world, Luke Donald, was in the driver's seat at the RBC Heritage Classic after posting 65-67 in the first two rounds. But a 72 on Saturday moved him back to the rest of the field. He finished strong with 68, but came up one short of Wes Bryan for the win. I think Luke really likes Harbortown golf links. South Carolina native Wesley Bryan of YouTube trick shot fame is now better known as a PGA Tour winner. He and his brother George, who caddies for Wes on tour, created outstanding golf trick shot videos for YouTube. Wes found his way to the web.com tour, won three times last year, and graduated from the PGA Tour this year. In 13 starts on the PGA Tour prior to the Heritage, Bryan had only missed four cuts. That's a very good stat for a rookie. More impressively, he had three top 10s and four top 25s, which earned him $900,000, enough to guarantee his card for 2018, every rookie's primary goal. With the win, he now gets a new two-year exemption, an invitation to the Masters and other majors, plus the WGCs with the $1.1 million for the win. He's now close to $2 million for the year. It's a very good year for Wes Bryan. In other news around the tournament, good to see Patrick Cantlay continue his form, return to his good form. He finished in a tie for third with William McGirt, who will defend at the Memorial in a couple of weeks, plus another rookie, Ollie Nohat Schneiderhans. Snyder Jan said in his post-round interview, he's now seeing his friends, like Wes Bryan, winning, and it makes him want to excel even more. Carlos, here's another prediction for you. You can write it down. We will see Ollie Snyder-Jans win in the foreseeable future on the PGA Tour. These young guys, they just keep coming, Carlos. McGuirk played well at the Masters and continues to get better with another top 10, as I mentioned. Matt Kuchar was the favorite going in, but struggled on Saturday. He did post a low round of the day on Sunday to finish at T11. Jason Duffner was in the position to win, but dropped to T11 with a final round 76 on Sunday and wasn't happy about it. He had a little mini meltdown when he missed a putt and dropped his putter beside the hole, walking away and made his caddy go fetch it. The video has been running on Facebook. It doesn't put Duff in a favorable light for overall sportsmanship and kindness to caddies. Another storyline that surfaced at the Heritage, Ian Poulter was grinding on Sunday. He needed $144,000, but only earned $114,000 to regain his PGA Tour card. Poulter has been playing on a medical exemption and only had one more start to get the $30,000 he needs at the Valero Texas Open this week. If he could have just made one more putt any time during the week, any time during 72 holes, he would have finished at T9, which was good for $182,000, which would have finalized what he needed. Making the cut this week in Texas will probably get the job done. If not, he'll have to get a couple more sponsors, exemptions, or something later in the season to max that out. Something surprising from Harbortown Links, Jim Furyk missed the cut. This course is made for him, and it's highly unusual that he would miss the weekend at the Heritage. Carlos, I do have a question for you. Should more courses be like Harbortown Links rather than the 7,800-yard bomber courses we seem to have week in and week out? On these shorter courses, the ball strikers have a chance, and if you go down the list, you see a lot of ball strikers, a lot of guys aren't long off the tee, but control it, hit irons into greens and make some putts. So what do you think? What's your thoughts on that?
Well, we talked about that sort of thing, how much it was, 3 weeks ago, I think, when you were not in the show, that Kieran was here, and we talked about that for the LPGA, and I'm going to give you the same answer that we talked about that time. I like to see more of a balance. I don't like to see everything that it has to be a longer course. I like for everybody to have a chance. I mean, you give sometimes you're going to have this shorter courses or straighter courses that are made for ball strikers, and then you have the ones where the bombers can flourish. I mean, you got to have a balance. I don't like just going for longer and longer courses. It's really getting boring. Honestly, it's getting boring because you're not doing anything to have your skills there. So just hit it longer and farther and farther and farther, and you're really not putting any skill into it. And that's why I think really is Kieran agreed with that as well. You know, we are seeing the emphasis on getting stronger and bigger and go for longer drives and all that, and that's not what really golf is all about. So to me, now you give everybody a chance if you just do a balanced schedule between all these kinds of different golf courses.
I agree wholeheartedly. I want to see a balance. I don't want to see all short courses. I don't want to see all long courses. I want a balance. I want different type of courses. I want the old standards. I maybe want some new courses. But, yeah, we need to have a mix up. You guys are exactly right on that. I do have one final word from the Heritage, and that is kind of a fashion tip for Mr. Wesley Bryan. When you're in the contention on the final day, you may want to rethink your choice of that trousers color. The Pepto-Bismol pink just didn't work with that tartan plaid jacket at the presentation ceremony. So that's all I've got to say about that, Carlos.
I think give him props. I mean, he was just – I don't think he expected to win it. I mean, he said, well, Jason Duffner is so far ahead, I'm just trying to get to second. So it's okay, I'll take my pinkies today. But now he knows. I think he will take that into heart the next time. He knows that he's going to be in contention. Besides, what type of a jacket is that to win.
That's something you'd see at Goodwill, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean,
you know, something I've always
wanted. There's not much you can combine with that, you know.
Yeah.
What can you do? It's
like, dark blue, you got black, you got dark blue, maybe some gray, and that's about it with that baby. But, you know, we used to go, I got to tell you, we used to go on a bunch of guys used to go on a golf trip every spring. And some years would only be maybe 8 or 12 of us, but other years there'd be as many as 20. And we kept track of scores every day. We awarded prizes. It was a lot of fun. And we had to wear a jacket to dinner at the club we were at. At the place we went, you had to wear a jacket to dinner. And I always had the intention to go to Goodwill, find the ugliest plaid, pink, ugly green, whatever jacket, maybe two or three of them that I could find in different sizes, bring those along on the trip, and those would be awarded for the day's best prize, whether it was the worst shot, the most putts, or the lowest score, whatever. I always wanted to do that, and I never did. I think that would really be cool for a buddy's golf trip, is have four or five really ugly jackets, and the guy of the day would have to wear that jacket to dinner. And that's kind of what that tartan thing is. I don't know if I'd want to win that thing or not, actually. I might just miss a couple putts, so I was runner-up, so I didn't have to do it.
No, I would definitely miss that final putt before one of those jackets. No way. Hey, but there was action also on the LPGA, and I'm so happy. I was pulling for Luke Donald, and here I was pulling for Christy Kerr. You know, she's an honorary member there at the Silverado Resort and Spa, and she had moved to within 6 points now of qualifying for the LPGA Hall of Famer after she won the LPGA Lottie Championship on Saturday at Kapolei Oahu in Hawaii. She, after shooting a sizzling 62 in that third round, Kerr fired a final round of 66 to end the week at 20 under par to 68, winning by 3 strokes over Lydia Ko, Ingi Chung, and So Young Yang at the par 72, 6,297-yard Ko'olina Golf Club. She set a new tournament scoring record. She also broke the scoring record for one round on Saturday with that 62. That victory moves her, who is in her 21st year on tour, into the top 10 in the race to the CME Globe. She's now in 8th place. She got it going with birdies on 7 of the last 8 holes on Friday's third round. She won $300,000, now pushing her career earnings to more than $18 million. She had not won in the LPGA in 30 starts. That was since the CMS Group Tour Championship, which is the season-ending event, back in 2015. She has now 19 career wins, including the 2007 U.S. Women's Open. She's also third on the LPGA career money list. You might remember that she suffered a knee injury last year and had surgery in November for a meniscus tear. She did not play in the season opening tournament in January, which is the Pure Silk Bahamas LPGA Classic at Paradise Island in Bahamas. After having complications from that surgery, she also didn't play on the LPGA Thailand at Chamburi Thailand in February or the HSBC's Women's Champion in Singapore in March. It was 8 weeks after surgery that she hit a golf ball. She finished fourth at the LPGA's Kia Classic at the Aviara Golf Club in Carlsbad. Early in April, she won $65,580 after finishing the event at 1,200 par 276. Then she was seventh at the A&A Inspiration Plate last month at the Mission Hills Country Club in Rancho Mirage. She was 10 under, 278, and earned $77,517. With that, she makes it fifth on the official 2017 of LPGA money list. Last year, she played in 25 events. She earned over $456,000. She made 22 cuts, and she recorded 4 top 10s, including a season-best tie for 7th at the LPGA KEB Hana Bank Championship. Last year, she was also named a winner of the Golf Writers Association of America Charles Bartlett Award, which is given to a golfer for unselfish contributions to betterment of society. She has done a lot of things, and I'm going to ask you something later on about all that she's done and what she deserves. I'm not going to say it right now. As for other finishers, let's talk about Lydia Ko. Hey, she made a strong charge in the weekend with a 65 on Saturday and a 64 on Sunday, which landed her in a tie for second with Ingi Chung and 54-hole leader So Young Young, Canada's Alina Sharp. She finished one back in the tie, in that tie in a solo fifth. So Young Ryu, oh my God, she continues her strong performances with a solo sixth place finish. Aria Yutanaga, she tied with Stacey Lewis for 7th place, and Danielle King and Sydney Clayton round up the top 10 behind them in a tie for 9th. Other notables in Lee Park and Brooke Henderson, T11, my pick for the Rookie of the Year, keep opening up her lead in that race as expected. You know, at Sion Park, she finished 8th, 23. Minji Lee, also in that group, and Michelle, we finished T39. So, Fred, any comments before I ask you something about Christopher?
Yeah, I do have a couple of things. Number one, what is going on with Lydia Ko? She fired another caddy. She finished runner-up and fires the caddy. You know, is the caddy swinging the club here? What's going on with her? This is, what, her fourth caddy in, what, like 2 years or something? I don't get it. You know, I know last year she split with Ledbetter, which I think, and we both agree, that was probably a pretty good mm-hmm. idea. And then Ledbetter took a pot shot at Ko's parents, saying they played too much of a role in her life. And along that vein, LeWine Mayer had an excellent article in Global Golf Post this week. I urge everyone to read that. Go to globalgolfpost.com, look up the article that LeWine Mayer wrote. On So Young Ryu, she gives some very interesting insight into the Korean mindset and the parents' domination of children's attitude and behavior at a very young age. You know, it kind of limits that exuberance or outburst of emotions. That's what makes the Korean girls so much more mentally strong on the golf course. They don't seem to get too high, they don't seem to get too low. That's kind of ingrained at them at a very young age due to the parent strictness and their modicum of decorum that they expect from their children. Her parents, getting back to Lydia Ko, evidently her parents are still very involved in her career. And you cannot, you know, you can't think badly of them, because look at what Lydia Ko achieved at a very young age and where she is at in her career. She's earned millions and millions of dollars. She's set for life. She's won majors. She's, you know, on and on and on, set all kinds of records. But she is going through a rough patch here, and to keep blaming the caddies and that kind of stuff, this shows me that her mental attitude is getting a little bit off. It's maybe not the clubs. It's maybe not the caddy. There's something else going on there, Carlos.
I have to agree with you 100%. I mean, what is going on in her mind, because that's where all is happening. She still has the tools. She still has the skills. She hasn't lost them. And all that is in her mind. I mean, her caddy's not controlling what she's doing in there. So maybe there's something that we don't know that's going on internally with her parents right now. She was thrust into the limelight very early age. I mean, she has done something that nobody else has done at this young age that she is right now. We must know she's only 19 years old. So, you know, it's not like she's been around for a while or she's already a veteran on this, but she certainly has some growing up to do, and hopefully she'll get the right people by her side and she can correct it, because, I mean, the future for her is, the sky is the limit, and hopefully she'll get it straightened out and we'll see her back on her winning ways. But talking about winning ways, Christy Kerr, we could say that for her generation, she might be the best American player. And her quest to qualify for the LPGA Hall of Fame remains an uncertain challenge as she's nearing her 40th birthday later this year. And I was reading an article by Randall Mail, and that reminded me of a question that she was asked after she finished the tournament and the post-tournament ceremony, she was asked if she thinks about the Hall of Fame, especially since she's a step closer to it. And she answered, I'm going to read it to you. It says, "I've come this far, and I don't plan on quitting golf anytime soon. Why not? Sky is the limit. If you shoot for the stars, you may get to the moon. That's the old saying. Why not?" Why not? Well, one of the things is that the LPGA's Hall of Fame has long been the most difficult in sports to make, and it's getting more difficult with each passing year. I mean, last season, Indy Park became the first player in almost a decade to qualify. The LPGA has changed dramatically since its 27-point qualifying system was put into place back in 1999. But the LPGA Hall of Fame hasn't yet reacted to that. So there is an internal review going on now. I mean, if you think about Christy Kerr, she's 6 points away, but she's running out of time according to her age. I mean, how many other players older than her have been able to win what is required from her to do those 6 points? And when you see where the World Golf Hall of Fame voting in its past configuration was, perhaps was too subjective, the LPGA's point system may be too objective. So can you really measure greatness solely by points or numbers? You really can't. I mean, look at the players like, let's say, Lauren Ochoa. She easily surpassed the LPGA Hall of Fame point requirement. She amassed to have 37 points, but what happened? She didn't meet the 10-year tour membership requirement. She ought to be voted in by a reorganized veterans committee. Dame Lara Davis, she has 25 points, but she didn't compete in as many LPGA events that she could have early in her career because she played so much internationally and wanted to support the Ladies European Tour. And like you and I were talking before, but she was the Ladies European Tour. So she deserves LPGA Hall of Fame membership based on what she has meant to Europe's contribution to the LPGA. And we can go on and on and on. After Christy Kerr, which American has the chance? Let's go. Stacey Lewis, she definitely has a chance. She has 17 points. That's 11 LPGA titles, two of them major, the Kraft Nabisco and the British Open, two Player of the Year awards and two Vera trophies. After that, Lexi Thompson has the potential. She's just 22 years old, but there's not nobody else. So I ask you, even though there's apparently an internal review, what do you think about the LPGA's Hall of Fame point system? To me, it has to be changed.
Oh, absolutely. We've known that for some time. They've been discussing it. I'm surprised they haven't got anything done about it before. You mentioned Lara Davies. She finally got in by a vote of the committee last year. Her official entry is going to be this year, I think. But, you know, because she couldn't make the ceremony last year because of the way the stupid Hall of Fame scheduled the thing and over there in London. But, yeah, it's messed up. They require too much. And I've got a question for you, Carlos, and I don't know if you know the answer to this or not. But does Lydia Ko have enough points? But she doesn't have the 10 years. Does Lydia Ko have enough points to get in the Hall of Fame yet?
No, I don't know that number that she has.
Yeah, I mean, she's got to be getting close to the number, but she wouldn't have the number of years. Indy Park just got the 10-year thing last year, even with all of her major wins and championship wins. Christy Kerr has won 19 LPGA Tour events, including two majors. So, I mean, that's a Hall of Fame career. If you're on the men's, if you're on the PGA Tour, you're in. You're a lock. Two majors with all those wins, boom, you're done. You get 20 wins on the PGA Tour, you're a lifetime member. You don't even have to worry about qualifying anymore. You can play anywhere you want to play. So, yeah, it's way too difficult. And I got another name for you, Stacey Lewis. I don't think she has quite enough points yet.
She has 17. Stacey, I do know. Stacey has 17.
Okay, so she's
got a little bit. She's staying away.
And, you know, she's had a great career. She's got two majors. She's got, I think, 11 wins. She was number one in the world. You know, she was LPGA Player of the Year. You know, so, yeah, she's only 32. She's got a few more years to play yet. But, you know, there's some names right there for you that, you know, deserve Hall of Fame membership. But this point thing, it just and then this 10-year, you know, they have to be on for 10 years. That's ridiculous. You can come out and have five great years and completely dominate, just like Lorena Ochoa did. And then she decides, hey, I want to do some other stuff. I don't need to be out here. Why 10 years? That's just ridiculous. That's a stupid number.
Just so you know, I found out Lydia has also 17.
Okay. Yeah. And she's 19 years old. About 4 or 5 years? Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So that's our, my comments there on the LPGA, but you have some other news that you're going to talk to us about the Champions Tour. There was the time was turned back, and what happens there? Stephen Ames won? Was that right?
Blast from the past. Stephen Ames was the model of consistency, posting 67, 68, 66 in the three rounds to collect his first Champions Tour win in the Mitsubishi Electric Classic at Sugarloaf, just outside of Atlanta. Ames was born in Trinidad Tobago. You all know where that's at, but now resides in Canada. If you remember, Ames was the guy that kind of poked the bear, poked Tiger Woods in the 2006 WGC match play. Tiger went on to beat him in a route 9-8. I don't think that number will ever be beat. Ames, however, came back the very next month and won the Players' Championship at TPC Sawgrass. He has a total of 4 wins on the PGA Tour. He won the Children's Miracle Network Classic and Disney, both in 2007 and 2009. But this was his first win on the Champions Tour, so congratulations to him. If we're talking about the Champions Tour, we have to talk about Bernhard Langer. He posted a low round on Sunday at 65 to finish solo runner-up, 4 shots behind Stephen Ames, the winner. Langer now leads the 2017 Charles Schwab Cup race by 200,000 over Fred Couples. There's some big news for you. Yeah, Langer leads again. Hot dog. He has a win in 5 top tens and just 6 starts this year. Guess we can just give him the Schwab Cup to him again. You know, who cares about, Steve Stricker or somebody else trying to take it from him? Fred Couples, ain't going to happen. Fred Funk, David Frost, and Brant Jobe finished in a tie for third. Defending champion Woody Austin was T6. Carlos, that's all I got on the Champions Tour.
And there was also more action. We have a lot to talk about. It was in the European Tour, and Italy's Edoardo Molinari. Yes. He came
not Francesco, the other guy.
You know, the funny thing is that Eduardo is the older one, and we talk about Francesco. But Eduardo, he came from 4 shots behind at the start of the final round to win a European PGA Tour event for the first time in almost 7 years when he edged Irishman Paul Doon at the first playoff hole to take home the trophy Hassan second on Sunday. The 36-year-old Molinari, he stormed through with 2 eagles in his last 7 holes, 2 eagles, to shoot 68 and tie the 24-year-old Doon, who had a 2-stroke lead at the start of Sunday's final round. And he looked like that's his breakout win. He was at 9 under par after 72 holes at the Royal Golf Dar Islam Club in the Moroccan capital. But Doon hit his tee shot on the playoff hole straight into the trees and missed a difficult putt for a bogey on the par 5 18, allowing then Molinari a short putt to clinch his first title since success at Glen Eagles in 2010. Paul Waring of England, he finished third on 8 under with Victor Dubuisson of France and Dane Les Jensen tied for 4th on 6 under. You know, you feel for Paul Doon. He was on the verge to win in his quest there for his breakthrough European win by Molinari, but he gets sufficient consolation prizes to be aware his upward trending will likely bring a win sooner rather than later. And positives, you might ask me, well, he got a career best paid day of over €277,000, which enabled the 24-year-old Grayson player to jump into the top 20 in the Race to Dubai standings. And effectively, even at this stage of the season, it means that he has to regain his full tour card, surpassing the amount won in his rookie season last year. Oh, and by the way, he also became the first new Irish player in 8 years to move into the top 200 in the official World Golf rankings. But Fred, at least for this occasion, though, you have to feel great because Dune had to play second best to a rejuvenated Molinari. You know, you might remember he was a former World Cup champion, but he had to battle through career-ending, threatening injuries to return to the winner's podium after not winning a tournament in 6.5 years. It's great to see him back again winning a tournament, Eduardo Molinari. So before we go to our Par 5 news, I need help. We're going to bring you. Oh, man, I need the music and all that to know where we're going.
But before we move to a couple previous, things to go yet, Carlos.
We'll soon have that back. Well, before we move to the previews, any final words on the weekend action?
Yeah, I do. Great to see Eduardo playing well. He's had some injuries. He was a world-class player 5-6 years ago. He is a little bit older than Francesco. Francesco's gone on to have a great career, both here in the U.S. and over in Europe. And Eduardo still has time to make his name. Paul Dunn, great to see him do well. He did so well as an amateur at the Open Championship a few years ago at St. Andrews. Even led after 54 holes. He bombed on Sunday, which is, you know, to be expected, but had a great, great event there. Here's another little note, Carlos. I don't know if you noticed, but 46-year-old Mike Weir is taking his act to the European Tour. He's going to have 8 starts on that circuit. 2 rounds of 160 at 14 over par left him well outside the cut line in Morocco, and the cut line in Morocco, and he was headed on down the road. But he's going to be playing a little bit over in Europe, so trying to make a few bucks over there. And then, Carlos, let's go to our previews. The PGA Tour is going to head to San Antonio for the Valero Texas Open, where Charlie Hoffman is the defending champion. Jordan Spieth scheduled to be in the field, but I wouldn't pick him for any of my fantasy pick this week because he might still be a little hungover from his SB2K17 in the Bahamas last week with his buds. The Champions Tour is off to Missouri for the Bass Pro. I don't know if you noticed it today, but Tiger made a big announcement there. He's going to design a new 18-hole public course to be built at Big Cedar Lodge. The new short course designed by Gary Player just opened there. If you remember, we had Matt Janella on a few weeks ago and talked about that. Michael Allen and Woody Austin will defend when the old guys play in the two-man teams and use the top of the rock at the Big Cedar Lodge Legend for the Legends of Golf Championship. And then the Web.com Tour, they're going to head to Southern Indiana for the United Leasing and Finance Championship. Seamus Power, the Irishman who did so well in the Olympics, is a defending champion there, Carlos.
And we have also some more action in some other tours. I'm going to take you all to the other side of the pond. And let's start with the European Tour, where there's going to be playing the Shenzhen International from the Gensheng Golf Club in Shenzhen, China, where the defending champion is Sunny Lee, but there's going to be also two-time Masters champion Bubba Watson, who's playing for the third straight year. He likes China. He likes to go there a lot. Every time you see a tournament in China, there is Bubba Watson. His best finish was a tie for 8th last year. Tommy Fleetwood of England is in the field. He won earlier this year in Abu Dhabi, holding off Dustin Johnson. You know, Gensheng Golf Club was close 3 weeks ahead of the tournament to make sure it was in the best shape possible. Kitadek Afidonrad won the inaugural tournament in 2015, and this is the first of 3 European Tour events in China. The others are the Volvo China Open next week and the HSBC Champions in Shanghai in the fall, and reinforced the Shenzhen International to finish Monday last year, making it the first Monday for a regular European Tour in 5 years. The minor tour in the European Tour is the Challenge Tour, and they're going to be playing the Turkish Airlines Challenge. They're going to be playing at the Gloria Golf Club in Balek Antalya in Turkey. And let me tell you a little bit about this, because it's interesting what I was reading about it. This is just a second stop so far on the tour after the Barclays Kenya Open almost a month ago. And you know what they say, the bigger they are, the harder they fall, right? The Challenge Tour positions itself as the breeding ground for best young golf talent in Europe and beyond, but that does not paint a full picture of its membership. I mean, along with the latest hotshots, players at the other end of the scale looking to rekindle former glories after dips in form or unfortunate runs of injuries will ply their trade on the road to Oman in a bid to return to the European Tour. And I'm going to talk about two of them. One of them is Álvaro Quiroz, who is the winner of 6 European titles, including several big events in the Middle East. He's coming to terms with losing his playing rights and finding himself back in the Challenge Tour. But it's a bit difficult for him. However, as he prepares to tee it up this week, and he's sanguine about why he has had to drop down to the tour he graduated from back in 2006. But perhaps the most significant one of these in 2017 is Michael Hui. He's a 5-time champion on the Race to Dubai, but after a disappointing season last year where he made only 6 cuts in 28 events, now he's back on the Challenge Tour, and he graduated from in 2005. So one might have expected him, who has 4 Challenge Tour titles to his name, to be disappointed by that downturn in fortunes, but he's looking ahead to that with remarkably positive mood about the year to come. And we'll be sure to keep you posted on these players and their exploits on this minor tour. And to close, the Ladies European Tour is going to have the Estrella Damm Mediterranean Ladies Open. It's a full-field 72-hole stroke play tournament that will be playing on a stunning par 72 Terramar Golf Club in Barcelona, Spain. And let me tell you, this golf club enjoys beautiful views across the Mediterranean Sea. It's situated right on the water, just 25 minutes from Barcelona. And some Solheim Cup star names like Carlota Siganda, Asahara Munoz, Anna Nordqvist, Karin Kerr, Melissa Reed, Gladys Nocera, and this year European Solheim team captain Annika Sorensen are going to be there at Terramar Golf Club's in Sitges, Spain, this week for the inaugural Estrella Damm Mediterranean Ladies Open, which tees up on Thursday. And this is a new tournament that has been organized thanks to the European Cup, Solheim Cup team vice captain Marta Figueras Dotti and her family connections with the Barcelona-based Estrella Damm Brewery, whose motto is, what else, Mediterranean. So they are going to be off after this tournament and will return on June for the Turkish Ladies Open. And with that, we wrap up our four-call or look ahead of previews on all the major tours. And now it's time for the Par 5 news, and we have a ton of news. If you think we have talked a lot, wait until we go now for the Par 5 news. And Fred, you're going to tee it off as usual. You're going to talk about some petition to move the senior PGA.
Yeah, every week it seems like I get another petition for something. With Donald Trump, there's never a dull moment, you know. But picketers are at it again. They say they've got 17,000 signatures that signed a petition urging the KitchenAid to drop Trump's D.C. golf course for the senior PGA Championship. You know, they petition, you know, they embarked against, you know, on the women's tour, and, you know, they're petitioning about Trump Bedminster for the U.S. Women's Open, and now they're talking about Trump at Washington, D.C. Well, they're going after the sponsor, which that may get some traction, actually, rather than the tour, because the tour really has no real incentive to do anything. But KitchenAid, you know, they do women's appliances and things, so they've got to kind of take a look at this a little bit. The petition comes on the heels of a separate Care 2 petition that successfully convinced PGA Tour to move its World Golf Championship match from the Trump's Miami course to Mexico City. that wasn't the only concern. You know, Cadillac leaving as a sponsor there and not being able to get somebody in because of Trump was the real thing. These guys are taking the kudos for that. I'm not sure that's quite the case. The 2017 KitchenAid Senior PGA Championship is set to be held at Trump National Golf Course. I'm kind of actually thinking about going out for that, Carlos. They say, here's their quote, Trump's dangerous blend of racism, sexism, and Islamophobia, boy, there's a word for you, threatens the freedoms of our nation was built upon. KitchenAid is tarnishing its brand by standing by while he spews his toxic venom and implements destructive policies. They need to act immediately to drop Trump and reject his hate. Well, you know, there you go. That sounds pretty tough. Also worded by an attorney, I'm pretty sure about that. In a blurb about the organization, CARE 2 is a community of 34 million standing together for the good. People are making world-changing impact with CARE 2, starting petitions. Starting petitions, that's always a great place to start. Supporting each other's campaigns to help individuals, animals. Oh, we got to go take care of the animals. And the environment, a pioneer of online advocacy since 1998. They're using their power of business as a force for good. And, Carlos, I have never seen a sitting president elected by the people of the United States receive the type of negative publicity and unabashed, slanderous press that President Trump has been subjected to. It just continues to amaze me. If I can't have my way, I'm going to whine and cry about it until someone listens. I'm rapidly nearing my tolerance level for such things, and I don't know if we're ever going to have these kind of things on the show again because I'm getting fed up with them, Carlos.
Let me just tell you one thing. I mean, we've never had a president like Donald Trump, so if that helps at all, right? We've never had one like that. And when you said Islamophobia, I really had to look out to see if it was really a word. And yes, it was. I was like, oh, it really existed. It wasn't something that somebody made up. So, yeah, like you mentioned, it has to be really prepared by a lawyer or something that comes up with those small words.
He gets paid by the word.
Yeah, that's right. By those words, looked in the dictionary, let me see which one makes it look like I'm saying a big thing. But anyway, I get to talk about the man of the hour.
Sergio.
Yes, he's back on the forefront, and his putter is in demand after his Masters win. After his thrilling Masters win last week, putter Sergio Garcia is using is selling out. You might remember the first play of hole last Sunday, two Sundays ago. Sergio Garcia rolled in a 12-footer for a birdie to win the 81st Masters and the first major of his career. Well, it's not uncommon for equipment a pro uses with success to find great popularity with the average golfer, and Garcia's putter is the latest case. In a video on GolfChannel.com, equipment insider Matt Adams explains how TaylorMade is struggling to keep up with demand for the Spyder Tour putter. Golf Channel equipment insider Matt Adams said on the video, and I quote, "The putter is so popular right now that orders are absolutely flooding in. All of the new orders are coming in, are back ordered to meet demand until the end of May." Garcia put the putter in his bag for the WGC match play event in March. He's also not the only player on tour that has used the newly designed TaylorMade putter in competition. I mean, with Jason Day and current world number one Dustin Johnson also doing so. I remember Dustin Johnson made it popular when he won his first major last year. Then Jason Day got convinced about it. He started using it, but it hasn't been until Garcia used it that now everybody's like, oh, I need to go get it. Putting has long been the notable weakness in Sergio's game, often showing itself at critical moments and in majors before last week. But on the top greens at Augusta National, he averaged an outstanding 1.65 putts per hole. that's as good an endorsement for any putter as any, even the average recreational golfer does not nearly have Garcia's talent. If you'd like to buy a TaylorMade Spider Tour putter for yourself or the golfer in your life, you know, I'm just going to throw out there, my wife, maybe she will listen, she'll be listening. Father's Day will be here before we know it. No, I'm not suggesting anything. I'm just saying that that's coming up soon.
Maybe you could give her one for Mother's Day next month, Carlos.
We're talking about Father's Day.
Okay.
You may want to consider how good a player you or your loved one is, you know. The red, like Garcia's, or black models can be found for a mere $299.99 on the company's website and on Amazon.com. I'm just throwing that out there just so you guys know. With the Spider Tour Platinum coming in at $219.99 on both sides. Fred, I know you talked about last week about the huge money for professionals received from large corporations to promote their products and why they do it. But this goes on to show you something interesting as well. You might remember back in 1999, Sergio was back then El Nino. With his youthful looks and running and jumping around after he hit a tremendous shot, celebrating what's thought to be the challenger to Tiger Woods' recent crowning, right? And like I said last week, I mean, this is the guy who hits balls through lines that no one else can see. And he can have that aura of greatness that never materialized. When we can dedicate a complete show as to why he didn't reach it, but here's my point. A lot of people can win a major or a master's for this matter, just like I said about Jason who won with that same putter, Dustin who won with that same putter, but not everyone can become just an instant marketing sensation. Sergio had this potential all these years of becoming that other marketing machine like Tiger was. He has already clothing gear that is being sold out after that. Now his putter, he's just tapping into that potential he had. I have said he's in a better place outside the golf course than he's ever been before, and he's just scratching the surface of what that hidden marketing giant can be. We've seen all these other big-time players recently sign ginormous contracts like Rory, Jordan, DJ, and Jason, who have won majors and be world number ones. But while people are buying the stuff, we didn't see them flooding the stores to buy them and selling them out. All it took was just one Masters win, a remarkable one, by the way, by Sergio, and all that untapped potential is starting to come out. Fred, I just find this interesting that we see how fans are still moved by those players like Tiger, who's not playing, but he says something and everybody moves. And now Sergio is finally starting to tap into his potential.
Yeah, I agree 100%, Carlos. And, you know, we see Dustin Johnson win and Jason Day win with the same putter, and it doesn't jump off the shelves like that. But Sergio, you know, we fail to realize the immense power of international marketing. It's just not inside the borders of the United States. There's Europe. There's Australia. There's Asia. There's China. You know, there's a lot of different stuff, places out there that are playing golf and want to buy the stuff that the winners use. So, you know, this is exactly the power, the combination of winning a major and being seen on television around the world can have for a manufacturer or brand that is endorsing that particular player. You know, and that's exactly why golf still has its place on television networks, because the fans that watch it, the audience, have the highest per capita income per household, and they have the money to go buy what the sponsors are selling. So, I found it interesting too, Carlos. And, you know, we talked about last week a little bit why they paid the millions of dollars. Well, that's a really good example. Hey, Carlos, let's talk a little bit about Michael Wong, the commissioner of the LPGA Tour, was awarded the Sports Executive of the Year by Synopsis Sports and was honored in New York City. Wong is just the eighth commissioner of the LPGA and assumed the role on January 4th, 2010, at really the low point for the LPGA Tour. The Chris Purcell, the head of content for Synopsis Sports, said, in selecting the honoree, we look at the previous season and examine ratings, new sponsored deals, media partnerships, new initiatives, and growth. For us, the LPGA really hit the mark on all of these fronts during the past year. During his 7 years at the helm of the LPGA, Juan has expertly guided the organization past the end of a global economic downturn and put the LPGA Tour on a solid financial footing by enhancing business relationships, growing the tournament schedule worldwide, maximizing fan experience, and increasing exposure for the entire membership. We've documented the growth of the LPGA Tour under Juan's leadership from a low of 23 events in 2011 to 34 this season. Total purse for the women has also grown from $41 million to nearly $70 million this year. At the same time, television hours have increased from 220 to over 430 hours. Impressive growth has been achieved in just even in the last 12 months, with the total purse increasing by $4.4 million over last year. Four new tournaments were added in New Zealand, Scotland, Green Bay, and Indianapolis. 11 of the 30 returning events this year feature increased prize money, and four of the five majors have bigger purses, including a record $5 million for the U.S. Women's Open. Juan's embrace of global marketing of the tour resulted last year in 18 different winners from 12 countries, and each of the five majors in 2016 was won by an international player. The LPGA Tour now caters to fans in 235 countries via its website and boasts television partners in 175 countries. The biggest events this season, the five major championships, will be available to more than 500 million TV households around the world. Juan's tenure has also led to the strong youth surge on the LPGA Tour. Winners in 2016, the average winning age was 22.3, while more than 70% of the champions last year were under the age of 24. So the tour winners keep getting younger, the tour purses keep getting better, and Michael Juan is leading it all from his chair at the headquarters in Florida. But, you know, being a world tour like the LPGA is not always easy. World politics can sometimes be tricky waters to navigate. Although Juan's goal is to grow the LPGA and increase the money available for women golf professionals, his day-to-day job includes being a deaf politician on the global stage. Juan and the LPGA has been drawn into this global nuclear missile crisis involving China, North Korea, and the United States. China's Shan Shan Fang, ranked number 6 in the Rolex World Rankings, was noticeably absent from the Lotte Championship last week in Hawaii, as the Chinese government had advised her not to attend. According to Reuters, Chinese sports authorities advised Fang and three other Chinese professional golfers to boycott the Lotte Championship because the company provided land to the United States to build an anti-missile defense system in South Korea. Then there is the flap over holding the U.S. Women's Open at Trump Bedminster and women's groups calling for a boycott of the event. Add to that these rules violations by Lexi Thompson, which denied her the win at the NA Championship, NA Inspiration, a couple weeks ago by a call-in couch potato rules official, and the loud displeasure voiced by nearly every player and golf fan. It's a wonder anyone could succeed at his job. In spite of all of this, Michael Juan has done an exemplary job of growing the LPGA Tour, and our hats are off to him. Plus, we congratulate him on a job well done. Michael, great job, sir.
I have to second that. And, you know, when Mike won, he became the commissioner of the LPGA in 2010. You all might remember the Ladies Tour was in turmoil. Now, 7 years later, the LPGA, like she just mentioned, it has a record number of events, growing purses, more television representation. I mean, he has enhanced all the business relationships. It has a deep talent pool drawing from more than 25 countries. This year, he was named the World Golf Foundation chairman. He is succeeding retired Tim Fincham. He's a father of three boys, and he isn't done yet. I mean, he has said, the commission has said he has big plans for the future of the tour. And I still remember one thing he said last year, and that really has still in my mind, and I remember like it was yesterday. I mean, he said that he was overseeing the LPGA. It was for him like raising 300 daughters he never had. So that's the approach you see that Michael is taking. It's like a personal approach to making sure that all of those players make the best out of it. And you have just seen it. And the LPGA, how they compose themselves, how they work at it. I mean, all the top players every week are in, week in and week out, playing. And that's maybe, I mean, I enjoy watching the LPGA every week and have to, like you and Reed, Michael won. Congratulations. You deserve that and much more. So well done. Great job. Great job. And may the success keep coming your way. Hey, there's excitement in the air. You know, it's building up in the Mayo Village.
Love is in the air, Carlos. It's in the air. That's love.
There's also excitement there in that small village of Kong as it's raising for the wedding of the year. Well, it's the wedding of the year so far, yes. So when Rory McIlroy and Erica Staal, that is not at the Ashford Castle next weekend. The South Mayo Village is accustomed to being in the public eye. I mean, you can go back to 1952 when The Quiet Man, starring young John Wayne and Maureen O'Hara, was filmed there. Pierce Brosnan, he married Keely Shay Smith there in 2001. 2 years later, the spotlight was on again on Ashford Castle when Westlife's James Phelan married childhood sweetheart Gillian Walsh. The 13th Century Hotel, which next weekend will host some of the world's top golfers, has had a string of famous guests down through the decades, including U.S. President Ronald Reagan in 1984, while Prince Edward, Prince Rainier of Monaco, and Princess Grace have also stayed there. Lori and Dave Gregory from Long Island, New York, are visiting Kong Mayo as it gets to set to host Rory McIlroy's wedding to Erica Staal in Ashford Castle. But, you know, the hotel has declined to confirm that McIlroy's wedding will be taking place there, but the award-winning facility is fully booked for next weekend. Maybe somewhere near there. Maybe it's not there. Yeah, right. People arriving at the 350-acre estate are vetted at the entrance, with two security staff at the arch gate yesterday politely saying to the property it's confined to clients and this arrangement is in place through the year. I don't know. It wasn't in place before, but if they say so, it must be. You know, McIlroy and his fiancée have visited that area several times, twice spending New Year's Eve at Ashford Castle, and it's all around businesses are growing, everybody's bracing for that, and what I can say is that for now, this is the wedding of the year, but I would say that with all the recent publicity, there's one scheduled for July that might rival it. And we'll have to judge it as it comes around. As you all know, Sergio is getting married to Angela Aikens. His wedding is planned for the week after the Open at Birkdale in July. And for a long time, that was thought to be his chance, his best chance at winning his first major. But he already won it at the Masters. And winning the Open could make it a real double-double if he wins it and put some more seasoning to that honeymoon with a Clara Jacques, Fred, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, and that should be about the time that Rory will be coming around, actually. You know, we saw that, you know, at the Masters, he wasn't quite back to form yet. He's still a little bit rusty coming off his rehab, off his injuries that he had. So, yeah, congratulations to him, and I hope they have a great wedding, and I hope he continues to play well. We need him to play well. We need him. We need Jordan Spieth. We need Dustin Johnson. We need Jason Day. We need these guys playing well. Those are the four guys that people want to see right now, and, you know, we got three of them that have had different injuries this year. So, you know, we need those guys to get going, so. Hey, Carlos, this next story really caught my attention. I was just, you know, I've been there over the last 4 years. I've been there about three times. I was just there in February. The PGA of America is selling off the St. Lucie Trail course and the Learning Center at PGA Village. In a letter from the PGA of America, President Paul Levy sent to the 14,000 PGA members, he formally announced the sale. And, you know, selling that Learning Center, really, I just don't get that. Anyhow, the letter, he talks about they made a commitment 4 years ago to the members of the PGA Golf Club to, you know, bring it, to restore it to its prominence, get back to a level of condition. And it really had gone downhill. It was in disarray. We've documented that. We've had Dick Gray on talking about it. They invested $13.75 million for the improvements to the Wanamaker Dye and St. Lucie Trail courses for renovation and expansion of the golf club house. So they put money into it, and their vision is to build a club, create a club which serves the physical representation of the PGA of America's core values and high standards, while offering a level of experience similar to Valhalla or, you know, some of the other places. So they say in the letter that divesting these facilities will enable the PGA to focus more sharply on the PGA Village Golf Club, ensuring it delivers on the promise of high-quality operations and course conditions. So, that all sounds really nice, but I'm really not sure the PGA of America is thinking this thing through. For an organization concerned with growing the game of golf and maintaining a perception of strength in the industry, selling one of its high-profile properties does not seem to mesh with those optics. As Levy mentions in his letter, 4 years ago, when Ted Bishop became PGA of America president, one of his priorities was to improve the conditions of PGA Village. The property had become so run down that teaching pros did not want to bring their members to the resort, and they did not want to play their winter events that they held there. Bishop hired Dick Gray, and Gray has vastly improved the quality of golf at PGA Village, and the numbers have increased. The members came back. I talked to several members when I was there. They said they left. They went away. They joined other places. But now, since Dick Gray has come in and got it back up and brought it back up to standard, the members came back. The membership has swelled. And so when I was there in February, the assistant general manager told me that having four courses, which the St. Lucie Trail is one of those, there's the Wanamaker, the Ryder, and then the Dye course, told me that having the four courses allowed the members to always have at least one course open for them to get tee times, no matter what was going on at the other three courses. And it's my understanding, now I have this on pretty good authority, I have not seen the exact numbers, but I have been assured that this is the case. I reached out to the person today, but he said he actually just destroyed the memo they had on it, so he couldn't send it to me, but he told me this is the case, that the PGA of America is sitting on a bank account that has over $100 million in it. You know, what are they saving the money for, a rainy day? You know, they've got another Ryder Cup in 2 years, and they bring in millions and millions of dollars from that thing. They got the PGA Championship every year. They bring in millions and millions of dollars from that. They charge 14,000 PGA members their membership fees every year. They get millions and millions of dollars from that. What in the hell are they going to do with all this money if they can't own these golf courses and fix them up? So, why couldn't they use some of the bank money to improve the remaining courses? Why do they have to sell one to finance the improvements on the others? Everybody in Port Lucie raves about St. Lucie Trail and the other three golf courses now. You know, I realize you want to sell when it's high, but they're in the golf business. Why are they selling anything? So, I don't get it, Carlos. I just don't get it.
When do you think they make sense? I mean, have they ever make sense? I'm trying to think. No, we don't have time to think. It would take too much to think and see when they have made sense.
The USGA and the PGA, sometimes you just wonder what they're thinking up there in those offices. I don't know. They don't. I just don't get it. They didn't call me, Carlos. They didn't call me for my opinion. I'm sorry.
Okay, let's just make a public statement here. If you want our opinion, we will gladly give it to you. So just call us. Just
we'll give it to you if you don't want it.
For free. Don't worry about it. Just call. Or just
we're
going
to give it to you whether you want it or not.
Just hear the show. You'll know it. Hey, folks, we saw this coming from the other side of the world, literally. And we warned you about it, even as we just brought out to the light the reports about it. And that is that Glenn Eagles is not on standby to host next year's RyderCon, despite claims that some Americans are anxious about the match, being stationed in France, following some of the terrorist attacks that there were there in the past year. Like I mentioned, it was recently reported that a secret plan had been drawn up to pave the way for the 2018 event to be switched to the Perthshire venue where the match was staged successfully 4 years ago on its first visit to Scotland since 1973, at short notice. Keith Pelly, the European Tour's chief executive, told the Scotsman at Augusta National, and I quote, "To be honest, we chuckled at that story, and it seemed every day that we chuckled a little louder because that's not true. We did not have any conversation internally. We've had no conversations with Glenn Eagles. We've had no conversations with the Scottish police. We've had no conversation with the Scottish government." End of quote. So I hope that's the end of that. That claim about the 42nd Ryder Cup, which is due to be held at Le Golf National outside of Paris, and it will be only the second time the biennial contest has been played in continental Europe, came in the wake of an attack at Paris Orly Airport last month. It followed other incidents in France over the past year, including the 84 people being killed as the truck was deliberately driven into crowds celebrating Bastille Day on a promenade in Nice last July. So that's it. It's not going to happen. Now, talking about another piece of Ryder Cup news, one place where it is going to happen, that is going to be Rome, because they have secured its hosting rights for the 2022 Ryder Cup after the Italian Golf Federation, or the FIG, because it's the Federazione Italiana di Golf, that's how it is in Italian, officially signed an 11-year agreement with Infront Sports and Media today for event management, marketing, and digital rights of the country's flagship events. The agreement will cover a total of 129 events, including 11 editions of the Italian Open, 88 events of the Italian Pro Tour, and 30 events in the 2022 Road to Roma project. Ryder Cup 2022 director Gianpaolo Montali had warned last month that Italy could lose the hosting rights for the Ryder Cup if they did not deliver 97 million euros of guarantees in the next 2 weeks. That deadline was missed, but the government's Council of Ministers agreed to help fund the event at the Marco Simone Golf and Country Club, 17 kilometers outside of Rome, following a meeting on Tuesday on April 11th. The Italian newspaper Gazzetta dello Sport claimed that the 97 million euro funding package will cover a 12-year period from 2017 to 2028. That's a lot of money, let me tell you. And it is claimed that the new agreement corroborates the diversification strategy of Infront Italy. Luigi Di Servio, the chief executive of Infront Italy, added that that partnership that they signed with the Italian Golf Federation is going to represent an important step for Infront, especially there in Italy. And it's interesting because politicians, when do they do that? I mean, some of those politicians in Italy have campaigned against the country hosting the Ryder Cup because they were claiming that it was a waste of resources which could be spent in other priorities. That's because Donald Trump is not behind all that. That's why those politicians were saying. But Rome's bid for the 2024 Olympic and Paralympic Games faced similar position because it was drawn last September because of that. But definitely the 2020 Ryder Cup, as you all know, and I just mentioned, is going to be played in the Whistling Straits in Kohler, Washington, and Kohler in Wisconsin. Like I mentioned, it's going to be only the second time next year that it's going to be played outside of I'm trying to say words without coughing. But anyway, it's going to
be only the third time.
Scotland? Now, it's going to be only the, the Ryder Cup has only been hosted outside of Great Britain and Ireland only once, and now it's going to be next year in France. The only other time was in Valderrama in Spain in 1997, and now in 2022, Friday will be only the third time that it's going to be outside of those two countries.
Yeah, I think it's really great to get the Ryder Cup around some of these different areas. You got players playing in it now from Italy and France, and from the Scandinavian countries and Germany. And so, we even had now the Solheim Cup went to Germany last time. So, good stuff. I hope it goes well for them. Carlos, in our last item in the Par 5 news tonight, Tommy's Honor, the new movie out of Great Britain, opened here in the United States over the weekend. And it's really difficult to get a bunch of movie reviewers to give positive reviews about a sports movie of any kind. The mostly positive reviews of Tommy's Honor about old Tom and young Tom Morris's relationship and the beginnings of golf in the 1800s in Scotland are a nice change. A review of Tommy's Honor by Kevin Cross from the LA Times gives the movie a very positive review, calling the film handsomely produced. Famous James Bond actor 007 Sean Connery's son, Jason Connery, directed this masterpiece. The director of photography, Gary Shaw, production designer James Lapsley, and costume designer Rhonda Russell richly evoke the harsh beauty of Scotland while warmly recreating the style and manners of the period. There's a certain Chariots of Fire-like reverence for all things golf and Scottish. But the woolly courses, a far cry from the manicured fairways of today, and comparatively crude implements used by the players provide an earthy balance. The writer from Variety gave the movie a mostly glowing review, though he did take issue with the golf swings. And that's always a problem with golf movies, trying to get some actors that actually look like golfers. While there's a certain charm in seeing these early sportsmen dressed as though ready for mass, the golf scenes are undone by the fact that no one can actually swing a club. For some roles, actors will learn to play an instrument or master a manual skill, but there's none of that authenticity here. Instead, Connery has gone back and posed and unconvincingly inserted digital balls, which defy the laws of physics as blatantly as the goo in Disney's Flubber. The strategy robs us of what little thrill golf has to offer, whether spectating live or on TV, as possible, impossible shots remain precisely that, impossible. The New York Times slaughtered the film, which, doesn't surprise me. They're trying to convince that watching two men bicker and bang balls around tiny holes for a better part of 2 hours is a height of entertainment. So, you know what, Carlos, I never believe anything I read in the New York Times or the Washington Post, so I'm not surprised at this fan from them either. Adam Shupick from the Morning Read related a tale from the film's producers about what inspired their desire to turn the book into a movie. The old course in its present state was too manicured and to represent in the 1860s and 70s. Striving for the authenticity, the filmmakers found Balcaire Resort Estate, about 30 minutes south of St. Andrews. Funny enough, golf's most cherished temple was reproduced in a cow pasture. Once the filmmakers relocated the cows and cut down the weeds, they built two holes, including the famed 18th. And they had to dig a slope and burn and the bridge that golfers know and love. There's a little movie magic involved, and the snow that they use in the winter scene was shot with paper on a 60-degree day. So, you got to take the movie license there with all this stuff, but... Tommy's Honor is being distributed by the Golf Channel and will soon be playing on your television set after its run is completed in the theaters. I do have it at the top of my list and may even venture to our local movie house to view it before it comes to Golf Channel, Carlos. That's all I have for the Par 5 News tonight, sir.
And with that, we'll wrap up the Par 5 News. And now we're going to take not a short break. We're going to take immediately the practice range for every week. Fred and I pick a topic, and each one of us take our own shots at it. And this topic is worth bringing back to talk a little bit about it. And it It's about the rules, and Fred, go ahead, take it on and run with it.
Well, this is going to be a little bit more of a rant, Carlos, you know, as I am wont to do from time to time. These things just keep building up and building up, and finally it's like a snowball. I just can't take it any longer. You know, we've been following these rules infraction stories over the past several years, especially the ones called in from someone watching the golf coverage on TV from their couch. That had a noticeable impact on the event that they're watching. For example, Tiger's drop, wrong proximity at number 15 at the Masters, Dustin Johnson's ball movement at the U.S. Open last year, Anna Nordqvist's mishap in the bunker at the U.S. Women's Open. None, it seems, though, was bigger than Lexi Thompson's affair, which cost her the ANA Inspiration Championship just a couple weeks ago. The Lexi decision by the rules officials at the ANA is a story that seems to have legs. It just won't go away. Fans and players alike are upset with the severe penalty levied by the Rules Committee in this instance and seek changes that would better protect the players from this type of atrocity in the future. I wholeheartedly agree, Carlos. LPGA Tour Commissioner Michael Wan is duly upset and told the other ruling bodies of golf that very fact last week at the Masters when the USGA, the RNA, the PGA of America, the LPGA, and the PGA Tours met. Evidently, Commissioner Wan became a little more than just agitated and took exception to the views of the USGA on the rules enforcement via slow-motion replay and call-in rules officials. I mean, it should be clear to these guys by now, the screw-up with Dustin Johnson at the U.S. Open and the Lexi Thompson thing, this thing is just totally out of control. USGA and Mike Davis are living in a dream world. Golf is under attack now. The USGA's idea of golf still centers around country club guys wearing khaki pants and white polos playing their member guest events at the club. That is not the majority of golf, and the demographic is changing rapidly. The PGA of America should have a better handle on what's really happening to golf on the local level. Their 14,000 member pros are dealing with higher costs and fewer green fees as well as lessons every day. Seeing stupid rules decisions on TV is not helping everyday play. The Masters final round coverage was down 7.6%. More viewers are watching via live streaming on their mobile devices. How do tours convert that to cash if they're not going to renegotiate huge contracts with CBS, NBC, Golf Channel, etc.? The USGA is feeling pretty fat right now. But what's going to happen in a couple years when the FACTS contract runs out and no one wants to step in to fill their big shoes? The RNA and the USGA have long been recognized as the keepers of the rules for the game of golf around the world. The PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour may have to split with these curmudgeons and develop a set of rules solely for their use. Carlos, I'm fed up with this call-in stuff. I'm fed up with video slow motion replay. I am fed up with it. We've been talking about it. Something's got to be done. We can't have people sitting at home affecting the outcomes of professional golf tournaments, especially when you've got rules officials, video replay, and all that stuff right there. It just should not happen.
Well, I think they did something. I mean, they already proposed 30 proposed changes designed to make more consistent, fair, and straightforward rules that are easier to understand and apply, right? And that was at the beginning of last month. But let's be fair. I mean, let's take some other side on this. It's a problem that every sports fan has encountered. You'll be watching a game and something strange will happen. I mean, something unlikely and unlucky, I mean, the kind of which was almost impossible to foresee, right? Like you mentioned, maybe golf's the most high-profile moment came last year in the U.S. Open. You might remember Dustin Johnson was assessed a penalty after he was deemed to have accidentally moved his ball, right? It was obvious. Well, he had no intention to, but in the end, it didn't matter. And he almost lost the U.S. Open because of it. Lexi did lose hers. But make no mistake, this is not a golf-specific problem. fans of every sport can cherry pick a rule that drives them insane. Let's take the world's most viewed and most famous sport by far, soccer, right? For example, a handball call means fulfilling a host of different requirements that at this point seem to be applied selectively. Was it ball to hand or hand to ball? I mean, was it intentional? Was it the player's arm in a natural position? What exactly is an unnatural position in your arm? The truth is that nobody really knows. The difference is that golf rules makers, which is the USGA and the RNA, did something about it. You know, they announced that those results of its earnest attempt to eliminate all the game's most maddening rules is a bold and brave series of changes, one that should leave golf fans everywhere excited. I don't know why you're not excited. I mean, the best rules in sports are the simplest ones, designed to solve specific identifiable problems. They are doing that because golf rules book is so old relative to other sports, right? And the game is so nuanced through the sheer passage of time that rules began to sprout up in golf that didn't do any of these things. So just wait until 2019. That's when it's going to happen. It's going to happen. So that's what I have to say. I mean, starting 2019, gone are going to be many of those rules punishing non-beneficial actions. So if the ball moves when you're trying to mark it, for example, and the proposed rule says just to put it back, that's it. Spike marks that were previously deemed unrepairable cannot be fixed. So be excited, man. Don't feel that way. Don't feel that way.
You know, we're as golfers, you know, we learn at very young age the rules that apply to playing golf competitively. You know, don't tap down spike marks. You know all the stuff that you do. Okay, and you know, it's supposed to be a gentleman's game, and you call your own penalties and all that good stuff. And we've completely got away from that. And you know, the large purses, the amount of money that's out there has dictated this. And then all this digital stuff on video is just, you know, it's like a toy for these guys. And they're just over the top of it. They've got to stop and do something. I just can't handle it anymore, Carlos. So that's all I'm going to say about it. It was my rant. I'm over it now for the minute until it happens again, and then I'll go off again.
But don't worry. In 2019, all of it will be over. Golf will be perfect. There will be nobody, no need anybody to call from anywhere in the world to report.
If you believe that, I got some swamp ground in Florida, I'll tell you.
I have a joke about that, and I'll make it another time because we're going to run out of time soon anyway. But let's go now to the final parts, and let's talk about a little bit of, you know, as much run as it has gotten, I'm still not sure we're properly framing this Dustin Johnson story. The number one golfer in the world missed the Masters with a back injury after walking to the first tee last Thursday. And, oh, yeah, he was on a three-tournament winning streak. The whole thing was downright preposterous. He said at the time that the injury had happened on Monday. If it had happened on Monday instead of Wednesday, that he probably could have played, but that he had no chance of contending had he teed it up. So when will he be teeing it up? Well, he told AP's Doc Ferguson that he's targeting a May return. He has scheduled the next 3 weeks off anyway, so there will be no temptation to play before he's fully recovered. His next tournament is the Wells Fargo Championship, which starts May 4th, which will be the first of three in a row that he will be playing. He also expounded on that interview that the severity of his injury, which happened when he was climbing down the stairs in his socks to move his car at his rental house in near Augusta National. And he told Ferguson, and I quote, "I thought I broke my back in half. I thought my back was broken," end of quote. You know, the entire thing is as bizarre as it's unfortunate, but at least DJ does not have any long-term damage. to his bag and will be back on the course sooner rather than later. The other good news, hey, he's still looking for that fourth win in a row. So good news there, DJ. And finally, Matt McNeely's award-winning ways continued last Friday as the Stanford senior was named the recipient of the 2017 Byron Nelson Award. He earns that honor as the final year of a stellar college career winds down. McNeely, number three in the Golf Week staggering rankings, has 11 college wins, tying him for the school record alongside Tiger Woods and Patrick Rogers. He won six times in his sophomore year, on his way to capturing the 2015 Haskins Award presented by Stifel. Players are only eligible for the Byron Nelson Award if they're graduating seniors. The selection committee considers equally a nominee's entire collegiate academic and golf career, as well as his character and integrity while in college. A nominee's good citizenship, following the example of the namesake Byron Nelson, is also a strong consideration. And as for that, Fred, aside from his on-course exploits, McNeely definitely has done some fine work in the classroom. He's a senior that has been named All Pac-12 academic each of the past two seasons while majoring in management science and engineering. So congratulations go to Matt.
And he's going to walk out in one of these, in about 15 years, take over a multi-billion-dollar business. So he's pretty much in pretty good shape. He doesn't need golf. Hey, also, it came out today, reported today, that Dustin Johnson has been hitting golf balls and said he's hitting it better than he ever has. So he's back on form, the way it sounds. Carlos, the band got back together for the Spring Break 2017. Ricky Fowler, Jordan Spieth, Smiley Coffin, and Justin Thomas reunited last week at Baker's Bay in the Bahamas to relive their famous Spring Break adventure of last year. I'm sure some of the more daring male bonding and reverie from last year was somewhat muted, though, as Jordan, Justin, and Smiley brought their girls along. But poor Ricky had to manage solo. So if you're so inclined to these kind of things, you can see the photos of the boys' great Spring Break adventure and their Snapchat pages, if you're on Snapchat. Jordan Spieth and Hideki Matsuyama commit to the Zurich team event. Spieth, who's played in the Zurich Classic grand total of once prior this year, will be able to make it back to the States for the new two-man team format at the Zurich Classic next week and will pair up with fellow Texan Ryan Palmer. The event that will use alternate shot in the first and third rounds and best ball in the second and fourth rounds. It'll be the first time the PGA Tour has used a two-man team format for an official event since 1981. Patrick Reed is going to pair with Patrick Cantlay. Hideki is going to be with his countryman, Tanihara. Bubba Watson and J.B. Holmes will form a Bombers duo. South Africans Brandon Grace and Louis Oosthuizen will pair up. Formidable teams have been entered with Ricky Fowler and Jason Day, plus Justin Rose will form an all-Olympic team with Henrik Stenson. In addition to having seven of the top 10 players in the world, the Zurich Classic now has nine of the top 20 and 13 of the top 25. Should be a fun event, Carlos. Hey, I was somewhat surprised I didn't see your name on the bidding list for the Augusta National Green Jacket. It brought $139,000 at the auction. You always look so good in green, Carlos.
They banned me. They banned me because we're in the media, so they said no media people can.
Oh, I thought maybe you bid $138,000 and just got beat or something.
Yeah.
But, a Symmetra Tour player is using a unique financing plan to stay out on tour. Rachel Rohana, the daughter and wife of cattle farmers in Pennsylvania, is selling cows to finance her golf career on the Symmetra Tour. Rohana said, "We're getting to the point where I'm trying to sell some of my cows to help subsidize my career. It's a grind out there every week to make sure you're paying the entry fee and caddy." When Rohana won the Symmetra Tour 2015 Faraday Classic in Sarasota, she bought a cow that had been born on their farm and sold it to a friend in 2013. 2 years later, that friend was getting ready to resell the cow, and Rohana wanted it back. "My husband's friend said, 'You can buy it, but I didn't have the money.' So when I won, all I could think about was buying back my cow. Since coming back to the farm, Sarah Bay has had two calves. Rohanna is now trying to sell the male calf to get her through the 2017 season on the Symmetric Tour. Carlos, I have some personal experience with this. I graduated from the Ohio State University in agriculture economics. I grew up on a farm, so I have complete understanding of this type of high finance. While attending college, my father once sold our old manure spreader to cover one quarter's tuition and never let me forget that fact. And when I first went to college, I sold my herd of sheep that I built up over 7 years. So, I understand where she's coming from. Kudos to Miss Rohanna and her family. I hope she makes it to the big tour, Carla. Farmers need golf, too.
Well, you said you have experience. I can't say that. So. But anyway, Backliners, that wraps up another week of the Backline Report. Thank you for listening to us. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. Also, remember, we're on Roku TV. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter, our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Vader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and hey, enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Daddy, where do babies come from?
Honey?
Mommy went to the store.
Oh, well, you see, there's a mommy and a daddy, right?
Right.
And see, when they call Geico, they could save a bunch of money on car insurance.
Oh, really? And that makes them happy?
Yes, that makes them very happy.
That's good.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we could have this talk, Sunshine.
Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
Tom Thumb, Albertsons, Chevron, and Texaco are offering more savings at the pump. Earn 2x gas reward points on all participating Monopoly items through April 25th. Purchase products with Monopoly Collect to Win game tags and enter your number at checkout to earn points. Redeem gas rewards for up to 20 cents off per gallon at participating Chevron or Texaco stations and $1 off per gallon at Tom Thumb stations, up to 25 gallons in a single fill-up. Other restrictions and exclusions apply. Go to tomthumb.com/rewards or albertsons.com/rewards for more information. See game rules at playmonopoly.us. Monopoly is a trademark of Hasbro and is used with permission.